Chapter 5. Ransom must have fallen asleep almost as soon as he landed, for he remembered nothing more till what seemed the song of a bird broke in upon his dreams. Opening his eyes, he saw that it was a bird indeed, a long-legged bird like a very small stork, singing rather like a canary. Full daylight, or what passes for such in Perelandra, was all about him, and in his heart such a premonition of good adventure as made him sit up forthwith and brought him, a moment later, to his feet. He stretched his arms and looked around. He was not on the orange-coloured island, but on the same island which had been his home ever since he came to this planet. He was floating in a dead calm, and therefore had no difficulty in making his way to the shore. And there he stopped in astonishment. The lady's island was floating beside his, divided only by 5 feet or so of water. The whole look of the world had changed. There was no expanse of sea now visible, only a flat, wooded landscape as far as the eye could reach in every direction. Some 10 or 12 of the islands, in fact, were here lying together and making a short-lived continent. And there, walking before him, as if on the other side of a brook, was the lady herself, walking with her head a little bowed, and her hands occupied in plaiting together some blue flowers. She was singing to herself in a low voice, but stopped and turned as he hailed her and looked him full in the face. "I was young yesterday," she began, but he did not hear the rest of her speech. The meeting, now that it had actually come about, proved overwhelming. You must not misunderstand the story at this point. What overwhelmed him was not in the least the fact that she, like himself, was totally naked. Embarrassment and desire were both 1,000 miles away from his experience, and if he was a little ashamed of his own body, that was a shame which had nothing to do with difference of sex, and turned only on the fact that he knew his body to be a little ugly and a little ridiculous. Still less was her colour a source of horror to him. In her own world, that green was beautiful and fitting. It was his pasty white and angry sunburn which were the monstrosity. It was neither of these, but he found himself unnerved. He had to ask her presently to repeat what she had been saying. "I was young yesterday," she said, "when I laughed at you. Now I know that the people in your world do not like to be laughed at." "You say you were young?"
"Yes."
"Are you not young today also?" She appeared to be thinking for a few moments, so intently that the flowers dropped unregarded from her hand.
"I see it now," she said presently. "It is very strange to say one is young at the moment one is speaking. But tomorrow I shall be older, and then I shall say I was young today." "You are quite right. This is great wisdom you are bringing, O piebald man."
"What do you mean?"
"This looking backward and forward along the line, and seeing how a day has one appearance as it comes to you, and another when you are in it, and a third when it has gone past, like the waves."
"But you are very little older than yesterday."
"How do you know that?"
"I mean," said Ransom, "a night is not a very long time." She thought again, and then spoke suddenly, her face lightening.
"I see it now," she said. "You think times have lengths. A night is always a night, whatever you do in it, as from this tree to that is always so many paces, whether you take them quickly or slowly. I suppose that is true, in a way. But the waves do not always come at equal distances. I see that you come from a wise world, if this is wise. I have never done it before, stepping out of life into the alongside and looking at oneself living as if one were not alive. Do they all do that in your world, piebald?"
"What do you know about other worlds?" said Ransom.
"I know this. Beyond the roof it is all deep heaven, the high place. And the low is not really spread out, as it seems to be." Here she indicated the whole landscape. "But is rolled up into little balls, little lumps of the low swimming in the high. And the oldest and greatest of them have on them that which we have never seen nor heard, and cannot at all understand. But on the younger, Meleldil has made to grow the things like us that breathe and breed."
"How have you found all this out? Your roof is so dense that your people cannot see through into deep heaven and look at the other worlds." Up till now her face had been grave. At this point she clapped her hands, and a smile such as Ransom had never seen changed her. One does not see that smile here except in children, but there was nothing of the child about it there.
"Oh, I see it," she said. "I am older now. Your world has no roof, You look right out into the high place and see the great dance with your own eyes. You live always in that terror and that delight, and what we must only believe you can behold. Is not this a wonderful invention of Meleldil's? When I was young, I could imagine no beauty but this of our own world, but he can think of all and all different. That is one of the things that is bewildering me, said Ransom, that you are not different. You are shaped like the women of my own kind. I had not expected that. I have been in one other world beside my own, but the creatures there are not at all like you and me. What is bewildering about it? I do not see why different worlds should bring forth like creatures. Do different trees bring forth like fruit? But that other world was older than yours, she said. How do you know that? Asked Ransom in amazement. Maleldil is telling me, answered the woman, and as she spoke the landscape had become different, though with a difference none of the senses would identify. The light was dim, the air gentle, and all Ransom's body was bathed in bliss. But the garden world where he stood seemed to be packed quite full, and, as if an unendurable pressure had been laid upon his shoulders, his legs failed him, and he half sank, half fell into a sitting position. "It all comes into my mind now," she continued. "I see the big furry creatures and the white giants—what is it you called them? The Sorns and the Blue Rivers. Oh, what a strong pleasure it would be to see them with my outward eyes, to touch them, and the stronger because there are no more of that kind to come. It is only in the ancient worlds they linger yet." "Why?" said Ransom in a whisper, looking up at her. "You must know that better than I," she said. "For was it not in your own world that all this happened?"
"All what?"
"I thought it would be you who would tell me of it," said the woman, now in her turn bewildered.
"What are you talking about?" said Ransom.
"I mean," said she, "that in your world Maleldil first took himself this form, the form of your race and mine."
"You know that?" said Ransom sharply.
Those who have had a dream which is very beautiful, but from which, nevertheless, they have ardently desired to awake, will understand his sensations. "Yes, I know that Maleldil has made me older to that amount since we began speaking." The expression on her face was such as he had never seen, and could not steadily look at. The whole of this adventure seemed to be slipping out of his hands. There was a long silence. He stooped down to the water and drank before he spoke again. "O my lady," he said, "why do you say that such creatures linger only in the ancient worlds?"
"Are you so young?" she answered.
"How could they come again? Since our beloved became a man, how should reason in any world take on another form? Do you not understand? That is all over. Among times there is a time that turns a corner, and everything this side of it is new. Times do not go backward."
"And can one little world like mine be the corner?"
"I do not understand. Corner with us is not the name of a size."
"And do you," said Ransom with some hesitation, "and do you know why he came thus to my world?" All through this part of the conversation he found it difficult to look higher than her feet, so that her answer was merely a voice in the air above him.
"Yes," said the voice, "I know the reason. But it is not the reason you know. There was more than one reason. And there is one I know and cannot tell to you, and another that you know and cannot tell to me."
"And after this," said Ransom, "it will all be men."
"You say it as if you were sorry."
"I think," said Ransom, "I have no more understanding than a beast. I do not well know what I am saying. But I loved the furry people whom I met in Malakandra, that old world. Are they to be swept away? Are they only rubbish in the deep heaven?"
"I do not know what rubbish means," she answered, "nor what you are saying. You do not mean they are worse because they come early in the history and do not come again. They are their own part of the history and not another. We are on this side of the wave and they on the far side. All is new."
One of Ransom's difficulties was an inability to be quite sure who was speaking at any moment in this conversation. It may or may not have been due to the fact that he could not look long at her face. And now he wanted the conversation to end. He had enough. Not in the half-comic sense whereby we use those words to mean that a man has had too much, but in the plain sense. He had his fill, like a man who has slept or eaten enough. Even an hour ago he would have found it difficult to express this quite bluntly,
but now it came naturally to him to say, "I do not wish to talk any more, but I would like to come over to your island so that we may meet again when we wish."
"Which do you call my island?" said the lady.
"The one you are on," said Ransom. "What else?"
"Come," she said, with a gesture that made the whole world a house and her a hostess.
He slid into the water and scrambled out beside her. Then he bowed, a little clumsily, as all modern men do, and walked away from her into a neighbouring wood. He found his legs unsteady, and they ached a little. In fact, a curious physical exhaustion possessed him. He sat down to rest for a few minutes, and fell immediately into dreamless sleep. He awoke, completely refreshed, but with a sense of insecurity. This had nothing to do with the fact that he found himself, on waking, strangely attended. At his feet, and with its snout partially resting upon them, lay the dragon. It had one eye shut and one open. As he rose on his elbow and looked about him, he found that he had another custodian at his head, a furred animal something like a wallaby, but yellow. It was the yellowest thing he had ever seen. As soon as he moved, both beasts began nudging him. They would not leave him alone till he rose, and when he had risen, they would not let him walk in any direction but one. The dragon was much too heavy for him to shove it out of the way, and the yellow beast danced round him in a fashion that headed him off from every direction but the one it wanted him to go. He yielded to their pressure, and allowed himself to be shepherded first through a wood of higher and browner trees than he had yet seen, and then across a small open space and into a kind of alley of bubble trees, and beyond that into large fields of silver flowers that grew waist high. And then he saw that they had been bringing him to be shown to their mistress. She was standing a few yards away, motionless but not apparently disengaged, doing something with her mind, perhaps even with her muscles, that he did not understand. It was the first time he had looked steadily at her, himself unobserved, and she seemed more strange to him than before. There was no category in the terrestrial mind which would fit her. Opposites met in her and were fused in a fashion for which we have no images. One way of putting it would be to say that neither our sacred nor our profane art could make her portrait. Beautiful, naked, shameless, young, she was obviously a goddess. But then the face so calm that it escaped insipidity by the very concentration of its mildness. The face that was like the sudden coldness and stillness of a church when we enter it from a hot street, that made her a Madonna. The alert inner silence which looked out from those eyes overawed him. Yet at any moment she might laugh like a child, or run like Artemis, or dance like a Maenad. All this against the golden sky, which looked as if it were only an arm's length above her head. The beasts raced forward to greet her, and as they rushed through the feathery vegetation, they startled from it masses of the frogs, so that it looked as if huge drops of vividly coloured dew were being tossed in the air. She turned as they approached her and welcomed them. And once again the picture was half like many earthly scenes, but in its total effect unlike them all. It was not really like a woman making much of a horse, nor yet a child playing with a puppy. There was in her face an authority, in her caresses a condescension, which, by taking seriously the inferiority of her adorers, made them somehow less inferior, raised them from the status of pets to that of slaves. As Ransom reached her, she stooped and whispered something in the ear of the yellow creature, and then, addressing the dragon, bleated to it almost in its own voice. Both of them, having received their congé, darted back into the woods. "The beasts in your world seem almost rational," said Ransom.
"We make them older every day," she answered. "Is not that what it means to be a beast?"
But Ransom clung to her use of the word "we." "That is what I have come to speak to you about," he said. "Maleldil has sent me to your world for some purpose. Do you know what it is?" She stood for a moment almost like one listening, and then answered, "No." "Then you must take me to your home and show me to your people."
"People? I do not know what you are saying."
"Your kindred, the others of your kind."
"Do you mean the king?"
"Yes. If you have a king, I had better be brought before him."
"I cannot do that," she answered. "I do not know where to find him."
"Well, to your own home, then."
"What is home?"
"The place where people live together and have their possessions and bring up their children." She spread out her hands to indicate all that was in sight.
"This is my home," she said.
Do you live here alone? Asked Ransom.
What is alone?
Ransom tried a fresh start. Bring me where I shall meet others of our kind.
If you mean the king, I have already told you I do not know where he is. When we were young, many days ago, we were leaping from island to island, and when he was on one and I was on another, the waves rose and we were driven apart.
But can you take me to some other of your kind? The king cannot be the only one.
He is the only one. Did you not know?
But there must be others of your kind, your brothers and sisters, your kindred, your friends.
I do not know what these words mean.
Who is this king? Said Ransom in desperation.
He is himself. He is the king, said she. How can one answer such a question?
Look here, said Ransom. You must have had a mother. Is she alive? Where is she? When did you see her last?
I have a mother, said the green lady, looking full at him with eyes of untroubled wonder. What do you mean? I am the mother.
And once again there fell upon Ransom the feeling that it was not she, or not only she, who had spoken. No other sound came to his ears, for the sea and the air were still, but a phantom sense of vast choral music was all about him. The awe which her apparently witless replies had been dissipating for the last few minutes returned upon him. "I do not understand," he said.
"Nor I," answered the lady. "Only my spirit praises Maleldil, who comes down from deep heaven into this lowness, and will make me to be blessed by all the times that are rolling towards us. It is he who is strong and makes me strong, and fills empty worlds with good creatures."
"If you are a mother, where are your children?"
"Not yet," she answered.
"Who will be their father?"
"The king. Who else?"
"But the king—" Had he no father?
He is the father.
You mean, said Ransom slowly, that you and he are the only two of your kind in the whole world?
Of course.
Then presently her face changed.
Oh, how young I have been, she said. I see it now. I had known that there were many creatures in that ancient world of the Hrossa and the Sorns, but I had forgotten that yours also was an older world than ours. I see. There are many of you by now. I had been thinking that of you also there were only two. I thought you were the king and father of your world. But there are children of children of children by now, and you, perhaps, are one of these.
Yes, said Ransom.
Greet your lady and mother well from me when you return to your own world, said the green woman. And now for the first time there was a note of deliberate courtesy, even of ceremony, in her speech.
Ransom understood. She knew now at last that she was not addressing an equal. She was a queen, sending a message to a queen through a commoner, and her manner to him was henceforward more gracious. He found it difficult to make his next answer.
"Our mother and lady is dead," he said.
"What is dead?"
"With us they go away after a time. Maleldil takes the soul out of them and puts it somewhere else, in deep heaven, we hope. They call it death."
"Do not wonder, O piebald man, that your world should have been chosen for Time's Corner. You live looking out always on heaven itself, and as if this were not enough, Maleldil takes you all thither in the end. You are favoured beyond all worlds."
Ransom shook his head.
"No, it is not like that," he said. "I wonder," said the woman, "if you were sent here to teach us death."
"You don't understand," he said. "It is not like that. It is horrible. It has a foul smell. Maleldil himself wept when he saw it." Both his voice and his facial expression were apparently something new to her. He saw the shock, not of horror, but of utter bewilderment on her face for one instant, and then, without effort, the ocean of her peace swallowed it up as if it had never been, and she asked him what he meant.
"You could never understand, lady," he replied. "But in our world not all events are pleasing or welcome. There may be such a thing that you would cut off both your arms and your legs to prevent it happening, and yet it happens with us."
"But how can one wish any of those waves not to reach us which Maleldil is rolling towards us?"
Against his better judgment, Ransom found himself goaded into argument. "But even you," he said, "when you first saw me, I know now you were expecting and hoping that I was the king. When you found I was not, your face changed. Was that event not unwelcome? Did you not wish it to be otherwise?"
"Oh," said the lady.
She turned aside with her head bowed and her hands clasped in an intensity of thought. She looked up and said,
"You make me grow older more quickly than I can bear," and walked a little farther off. Ransom wondered what he had done. It was suddenly borne in upon him that her purity and peace were not, as they had seemed, things settled and inevitable, like the purity and peace of an animal, that they were alive and therefore breakable, a balance maintained by a mind, and therefore, at least in theory, able to be lost. There is no reason why a man on a smooth road should lose his balance on a bicycle, but he could.
There was no reason why she should step out of her happiness into the psychology of our own race, but neither was there any wall to prevent her doing so. The sense of precariousness terrified him, but when she looked at him again, he changed that word to adventure, and then all words died out of his mind. Once more he could not look steadily at her. He knew now what the old painters were trying to represent when they invented the halo. Gaiety and gravity together, a splendour as of martyrdom, yet with no pain in it at all, seemed to pour from her countenance. Yet when she spoke, her words were a disappointment.
"I have been so young till this moment that all my life now seems to have been a kind of sleep. I have thought that I was being carried, and behold, I was walking."
Ransom asked what she meant.
"What you have made me see," answered the lady, "is as plain as the sky, but I never saw it before. Yet it has happened every day. One goes into the forest to pick food, and already the thought of one fruit rather than another has grown up in one's mind. Then, it may be, one finds a different fruit, and not the fruit one thought of. One joy was expected, and another is given. But this I had never noticed before, that the very moment of the finding there is in the mind a kind of thrusting back or setting aside. The picture of the fruit you have not found is still, for a moment, before you. And if you wished, if it were possible to wish, you could keep it there. You could send your soul after the good you had expected, instead of turning it to the good you had got. You could refuse the real good. You could make the real fruit taste insipid by thinking of the other."
Ransom interrupted. "That is hardly the same thing as finding a stranger when you wanted your husband."
"Oh, that is how I came to understand the whole thing. You and the king differ more than two kinds of fruit. The joy of finding him again, and the joy of all the new knowledge I have had from you, are more unlike than two tastes. And when the difference is as great as that, and each of the two things so great, then the first picture does stay in the mind quite a long time, many beats of the heart, after the other good has come. And this, O Piebald, is the glory and wonder you have made me see, that it is I myself, who turn from the good expected to the given good. Out of my own heart I do it. One can conceive a heart which did not, which clung to the good it had first thought of, and turned the good which was given it into no good."
"I don't see the wonder and the glory of it," said Ransom. Her eyes flashed upon him such a triumphant flight above his thoughts as would have been scorn in earthly eyes. But in that world it was not scorn.
"I thought," she said, "that I was carried in the will of him I love, but now I see that I walk with it. I thought that the good things he sent me drew me into them as the waves lift the islands, but now I see that it is I who plunge into them with my own legs and arms, as when we go swimming. I feel as if I were living in that roofless world of yours where men walk undefended beneath naked heaven. It is a delight with terror in it, one's own self to be walking from one good to another, walking beside him as himself may walk, not even holding hands. How has he made me so separate from himself? How did it enter his mind to conceive such a thing? The world is so much larger than I thought. I thought we went along paths, but it seems there are no paths. The going itself is the path."
"And have you no fear," said Ransom, "that it will ever be hard to turn your heart from the thing you wanted to the thing Maleldil sends?"
"I see," said the lady presently. "The wave you plunge into may be very swift and great. You may need all your force to swim in it. You mean he might send me a good like that?"
"Yes, or like a wave so swift and great that all your force was too little."
"It often happens that way in swimming," said the lady. "Is not that part of the delight?"
"But are you happy without the king? Do you not want the king?"
"Want him?" she said. "How could there be anything I did not want?"
There was something in her replies that began to repel Ransom. "You can't want him very much if you are happy without him," he said, and was immediately surprised at the sulkiness of his own voice.
"Why?" asked the lady. "And why, O Piebald, are you making little hills and valleys in your forehead? And why do you give a little lift of your shoulders? Are these the signs of something in your world?"
"They mean nothing," said Ransom hastily. It was a small lie, but there it would not do. It tore him as he uttered it, like a vomit. It became of infinite importance. The silver meadow and the golden sky seemed to fling it back at him. As if stunned by some measureless anger in the very air, he stammered an emendation. "They mean nothing I could explain to you." The lady was looking at him with a new and more judicial expression. Perhaps in the presence of the first mother's son she had ever seen, she was already dimly forecasting the problems that might arise when she had children of her own. "We have talked enough now," she said at last. At first he thought she was going to turn away and leave him. Then, when she did not move, he bowed and drew back a step or two. She still said nothing, and seemed to have forgotten about him. He turned and retraced his way through the deep vegetation until they were out of sight of each other. The audience was at an end.